Well, it's good to be back with you tonight. The Smiths are worshiping in Huntington Beach. Apparently, Lori's brother and his family are renting a beach house down in Huntington Beach for the new year. So they're going to worship down in Huntington Beach and see their friends down there. Then freeze to death at the beach house. I imagine it's pretty cold down at the beach. But I want to tell you, I took the family up to Big Bear and we played in the snow yesterday. And I want to tell you, the more I spend in God's beautiful creation, looking at the beautiful trees and the snow, the more I can't believe people think that all of this beauty came by accident and just by millions of years of accidents. It's just incredible to me. But tonight we're going to talk about the life of David. And really tonight's lesson is more about David and the son he raised. We're going to look at one of the sons of David, which knowing what we know about David, a man after God's own heart, it's surprising, at least to me, that he raised a son like Absalom. And you might remember last time we talked about David, we talked about ugly desire of lust and the story of Amnon and what he did to Absalom's sister, Tamar. One of the interesting things about these stories after the sin with Bathsheba is we know that they are all part of this consequence, part of this punishment of David's lustful night, his ugly desire to be with Bathsheba. And one of the interesting things is that a lot of these stories involve ugly desires. The story tonight of Absalom is no different to that. It's not quite the same as a lustful desire that Amnon had for Tamar, but we're going to talk about ugly desire of Absalom, who I call the prodigal son, and that he matches the prodigal son in a lot of ways, with the exception of the last part of the prodigal son, where the son returns and there is the reuniting, there is the repentance. You don't get that with Absalom. You have the bad prodigal without the good prodigal in the story of Absalom. And so our story is going to take place in 2 Samuel chapter 15. That will be our text tonight if you want to begin turning there. And as you do, let me just kind of fill in some of the gaps of what has been happening between our last story of Amnon and Tamar and this story with Absalom. We're in a section of David's life. It's a very ugly period. As we've said, a lot of the consequences, a lot of the aftermath of his ugly night with Bathsheba is coming to fruition here. Absalom has been on the run. He has been away from his father because he took his own revenge and killed his brother Amnon for what he did to Absalom's sister, Tamar. And so he has to flee for his life. And according to chapter 13, verse 38, Absalom stayed away for an entire 3 years. He doesn't see his father. He's not in Jerusalem. And the thing about David that confuses a lot of people in Jerusalem is that when you look at Absalom, that there's not a whole lot of redeeming quality. I in fact, try to find something good about Absalom, and other than the statement that he was a handsome man, there's really not a whole lot there with Absalom. But there was something that David saw in his son Absalom that others did not see. And I'm not quite sure what that was. But others did not understand this attraction that David had. And so the fact that Absalom is away from him for 3 years is a very painful situation for David. Well, at the end of 3 years, he is allowed to return to Jerusalem. But even though that he returns, in chapter 14, verse 28, he still doesn't come and see his father David. And so they are separated for an entire 5 years. As Absalom is estranged to his father. And to kind of show you the kind of man that Absalom was, whereas David had a glimmer of light for Absalom David's general Joab did not. There was no love lost with Joab and Absalom. And so in a certain period of time, Absalom is wanting to talk to Joab. And Joab is ignoring him. He wants nothing to do with Absalom. And so Absalom finally gets so enraged that to get his attention, Absalom sets Joab's field on fire. That'd be kind of like you and I getting someone fired from their career. All of his crops that he's going to use to feed his family, to make a living, they're gone now. Because Absalom is upset because Joab is ignoring him. That's the kind of man Absalom was. And then the next story, after chapter 14, we get to chapter 15, and we see that Absalom now wants something. Something that is not his. He wants his father's kingdom. And so we're going to look at some really good lessons from a really bad man. Some good lessons from a bad man. So let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 15 and look at how Absalom steals the kingdom from his father. In verse 1, it says, "Now it came about after this that Absalom provided himself a chariot and horses, and 50 men as runners before him. And Absalom used to rise early and stand beside the way to the gate. And when any man had a suit to come to the king for judgment, Absalom would call to him and say, 'From what city are you?' And he would say, 'Your servant is from one of the tribes of Israel.'" That's who he was interested. He wanted to make sure it was an Israelite. "And once he found out it was an Israelite, Absalom would say to him, 'See, your claims are good and they are right, but here's the problem. No man listens to you on the part of the king.' And moreover, Absalom would say, 'Oh, that one would appoint me judge in the land.'" And Absalom isn't talking about wanting to be a judge. What he means is he wants to be the king. And the king was a judge. And then he says, then every man who has any suit or cause could come to me, and I would give him justice. And when a man came near to prostrate himself before Absalom, Absalom would stop him and put out his hand and take hold of him and kiss him. And it was in this manner that Absalom dealt with all of Israel who came to the king for judgment. And so Absalom stole away the hearts of the men of Israel. And so as we continue reading, he now puts his plan into action at some point. And look, if you would, at verse 8. It says, he says to David, "Your servant vowed a vow while I was living in Geshur and Aram." This is where he was when he was on the run. "Saying, 'If the Lord shall indeed bring me back to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord.' And King David said to him, 'Well, then go in peace.' And so he arose and he went to Hebron. But Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, 'As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom is king in Hebron.' Then 200 men went with Absalom from Jerusalem who were invited, but they went innocently, and they did not know anything. And Absalom sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city of Gilah while he was offering the sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom." And if you continue reading, what you have is David having to leave Jerusalem, flee for his life, and Absalom coming in and for a period of time taking over the kingdom. We just got done with Christmas. in which a lot of times someone will say, you know, what do you want for Christmas? And you'll say, well, I want this. I want the fire dog Marshall. I want this. I want that. And that's all good and innocent. But let me ask you, have you ever said something like this? I want something so bad, I'm willing to do blank. I'm willing to do anything. I want this so bad, I don't care what I have to do. I would imagine most of us at some point in our life had some type of strong desire like that, that we expressed in that way. Now, that doesn't mean we've done anything wrong, but what I want to get across as we look at Absalom and this desire for the kingdom is that just some lessons, some reminders that when we really want something, there can be some dangers, some temptations that we fall to because of that desire. So as we look at Absalom, what's one of the great lessons we learn of Absalom? Well, one of that is covetousness. Covetousness. In fact, I believe as you really look at this story, just kind of meditate on this story, and kind of visualize how Absalom takes the kingdom from his father, you're going to see that this is a story that really visualizes, that really shows the ugly, how ugly the sin of covetous can be. You know, that's one of the things that I think is interesting about the Bible, is that God wants to teach us about sin. And there are times where God says covetousness is a sin. For example, the last of the Ten Commandments is, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's things, that which belongs to your neighbor. That's a sin. But God doesn't just say, hey, this is a sin. There are times in the Bible where God shows us why it's a sin. God gives us this visual story of how ugly sin is and how it affects people. And I believe this is the story of Absalom. It not only shows us the sin of covetousness, it shows us how ugly it can really be. I mean, when you think about it, Absalom wanted it so bad that he didn't care whether he was the heir to the throne or not. He was not. He didn't care that. He wanted to be king. He didn't care whether his father desired him to be king or not. In fact, he doesn't ever go to his father and say, listen, we've had an estrangement, we've had a bad, but I would really like to be king, and I'd like to work this out, and you work with me on how to be king, if that's your desire, if that's something you would like. He doesn't do any of that. He doesn't care, because he wants to be king. And what we learn later on is he does not want Absalom to be king. That's not his desire. In fact, Absalom doesn't care whether his father was dead or not. This is where he really becomes like the prodigal. Remember, the prodigal comes to his father, and what does he ask him for? His inheritance. When do you usually get inheritance? When your father passes, right? But the prodigal can't wait. He says, I don't want to wait for you to die. I want it right now. And in the same way, Absalom doesn't care that his father's not dead. He wants to take the kingdom while he's still living. I want it now. And probably the worst of all of this is that he didn't care if God willed him to be king or not. He never inquires of God. In fact, to set up the coup attempt, he lies to his father about a vow that he made to God, just so that he can get to Hebron and carry out the coup attempt. That's how ugly covetousness can be. And I think you can see that there's a whole lot of apathy. I don't care about David. I don't care about God. Who is Absalom really caring about? Himself, that's right. Absalom. That's the only one he was caring about. When I think about Absalom, I really think about one of my favorite movies as a kid, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Do you remember this girl? I want it now. I don't care. Daddy, get it for me. She wanted one of the geese that would lay the golden egg. Now, a lot of you might know this, but in the original book, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, it wasn't the geese, it was squirrels, right? It was squirrels. Apparently squirrels weren't that great, so they switched to the geese. And remember at the end of this song, and I don't remember all the words, but I just remember her saying, I want it now. She jumps up on the scale, and you have that little horn sound, and she drops down. And then Willy Wonka, with that great line, says, she was a bad egg. Well, that's what that movie was. It was about a bunch of kids that were bad eggs, except for one. Except for Charlie, who wasn't perfect, but who was good. A good kid. I believe Absalom was like this little girl. I want it. I want it now. I don't care. I want it now. The Bible talks about covetousness, especially New Testament. Romans 13, verse 9 and 10. Romans chapter 13, and in verse 9 and 10, where Paul writes, for this you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, it is summed up in this saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Love, therefore, is the fulfillment of the law. In a way, Paul is saying that to covet what is not yours, to desire what doesn't belong to you but belongs to another, is the opposite of love. And that's the thing. You can see it absolutely. There's absolutely no love. And that's a surprising thing. There is no love for his father, just for himself. Let's take a look at this passage in Ephesians chapter 5. Verse 5 and 6, Ephesians 5, verse 5 and 6, where Paul writes these words. For this you know with certainty, that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Don't let anyone deceive you that a person can be covetous and somehow that's good, that's righteous. He says, such a man will not inherit the kingdom of God. And you see clearly why when you look at Absalom. So it's a great lesson about covetousness. It's a visual lesson about its ugliness from a bad man. But we also learn this lesson as we look at Absalom. And let me bring this out by asking you a question. Go back to chapter 15 and in verse 1, and let me ask you this. Why did Absalom get these horses and this chariot and these runners, these 50 men? I would imagine 25 on one side and 25 on the other. Why did he get all of this for himself? And the answer to that is, he was looking the part. He wanted to look like a king. He wanted people to think of him like a king. So he started looking the part. Now, there's nothing about Absalom that showed any quality of great leadership or any quality that he would be a good king. He doesn't even seem to even consider any of that. But he wants to instead just look like a king. And so he looks the part. He gets these runners and this chariot, and just like a king would. It kind of reminds me back when I played a lot of golf back in Arizona. I'd play with a buddy usually, and then they would team us up with a couple. And a lot of times these two people that you would golf with, I mean, they looked the role. They had the golf shirt, and they had the golf pants, and they had the brand new clubs, right? The latest in the clubs. And I mean, I was like, oh, man, this is going to be a tough one. These guys look good. And then they would tee it off, and they, and that ball go over here, and it go in the lake, and I'm like, they weren't good golfers, but they sure looked like it. They looked the part. Now, I wasn't a good golfer either, but I didn't look the part. I didn't fool anyone. But that's what he is. He's looking the part, because he knew it's easier to look the part than actually be the part. It's easier to fake everyone out than to actually become what you should be. And it's a good question for us. You know, as a Christian, do we want to just look the part? Let's face it, you stay in the church long enough, you know all the right things to say and all the right things to do and all the things not to do. And you can fool a lot of people. But what does that accomplish? To just look the part. If you're going to put all that energy in it, why don't you actually give your heart to Jesus Christ and become the part? Actually become a Christian. Sincere and dedicated. But there are some that rather just look the part. Or sometimes maybe we play a role. We play a role so that we will look the part, or that it might help us gain something. You know, it's really hard, you know, to be humble, as the song says, when you're so wonderful in so many ways. You know, have you ever, like, tried to expand your accomplishments or take credit for something that really wasn't yours, so that you look the role, like, well, look at what I did, even though deep down you didn't really do it? I've done that. Yeah. Tried to make myself look better. But all I was doing is playing a role rather than actually being the thing. Right? It's hard. It takes work. It takes time. Right? You can look like a doctor, or you can go to school a long time and become a doctor and do a lot of work. Right? So, he wants to be simply looking the part. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 5, if you would. And look at what Paul writes to the Corinthians. Hold your place in verse 15, or chapter 15. And let's go over to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And let's look at verse 12. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 12. Where Paul writes these words. We are not again commending ourselves to you, but are giving you an occasion to be proud of us, so that you will have an answer for those who take pride in appearance and not in heart. One of the things that Paul wanted the Corinthians to know is that he wasn't playing a role. He was sincere. But here he even talks about some that what? Take pride in appearance, but not in heart, not in reality. And so Absalom wanted to take the easy way. He just wanted to look the role. And so he got himself the entourage. I think another lesson you learn about Absalom. How did Absalom win the hearts of the people? It wasn't that he was truthful. He wasn't honest. It tells us back in chapter 15 that there would be an Israelite that would come, and he had some dispute. He had something that was significant enough. He needed the king to hear and to judge. And this was something that kings did. But he would do a beeline before he could even get to the king. And first, did you notice, he wanted to make sure he was an Israelite. If he wasn't an Israelite, don't waste my time. But if you're Israelite, okay, you're an Israelite, let me hear your case. And it didn't matter what the case was. It didn't matter how erroneous or false it was. He would say, oh, you've got a good claim there. You've got a good claim. What did he do? He was flattering them. As you look at Absalom, you can see there was no honesty in this. He was flattering them to what? Get what he needed. He was an ultimate politician, wasn't he? You think about a politician in the Bible. Here's Absalom telling the people exactly what they wanted to hear. And so Absalom stole the hearts of Israel with flattery. And at the end of the story, it tells us that the conspiracy was growing. It was increasing. He was really becoming popular. Of course, if you tell people all the nice things that they want to hear, whether they're true or not, whether you believe it or not, yeah, people are going to like you. But that's not a king. It's not a leader. That's not a Christian. Someone might say, well, what's wrong with flattery? Well, it may not seem like that big a deal if you just think, well, it's just being nice to people. But the problem with flattery is that's not being nice to people, it's being false with people. It's not honesty. In fact, as you look at Absalom, what? He falsely showed care for the people when in reality, he didn't really care about that. You can just imagine if he actually, when he became king, you never hear about him going to these people and bringing justice to them or hearing their cases. He wasn't concerned about that. It's just like these politicians who make all of these promises and the election year, they're out there with the people and they're hugging the babies and they're shaking the hands. And then once they get elected, where'd they go? Where's the promises? I'm not saying all politicians are like that, but a lot of them are. Just like Absalom. So he was using the people. And he had a very false humility. As people would prostrate, would bend themselves, bow before him, he would lift them up and he would kiss them and just, you know, gain their favor through this flattery and by giving them what? Attention. Look at chapter 15, verse 11. He got 200 men. He invited 200 men to go along and, you know, where he's going to be anointed as king. And it says of these men, 200 men went with Absalom from Jerusalem to Hebron. And they were invited, but they went innocently. They did not know anything. They didn't know that he was going to make himself king. They didn't know he was going to go against King David. He tricked these men. He used them. That's the kind of man that Absalom was. And ultimately, it all worked because this. People want attention. People need attention. You know, you ever think about how these cult leaders gain followings? How they get so many people to do stuff? It's because they find people who feel like nobody cares. That they're the outcast. And they listen to them and they make them feel good. And just like Absalom, they tell them good things. And you know, you give people attention. And you feel that need. There's a lot of times they'll just do anything. That's how strong this is. But again, with Absalom, it wasn't true caring for these people. It was just a selfish desire. I need you to get what I want. And so he paid attention to them, and he flattered them. In 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 5, 6, and 7, Paul writes, "For we never came with flattering speech, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed." Look at what he says, God is witness. Paul says, I'm calling God as my witness. When we were around you, we never flattered you. We were never greedy. We weren't after your stuff. God is our witness. He says, nor did we seek glory from men, either from you or from others, even though as apostles of Christ we might have asserted our authority. We as apostles could have done what we want. We could have asserted our authority, but that's not the way we treated you. But we proved to be gentle among you, as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children. As a nursing mother cares for her children, Paul says, that's how we were. It was a genuine concern and love for you. We didn't flatter you. God is my witness. In Psalm 5, verse 9, the psalmist writes this. Psalm 5, verse 9. There is nothing reliable in what they say. Their inward part is destruction itself. Their throat is an open grave. They flatter with their tongue. What do you think about that? They flatter with their tongue. Their mouth, he says, is a open grave. What's the problem with an open grave? Why don't they leave graves just open all the time? Because people can fall in, right? Just keep falling into the grave. That's what he says about this type of person that flatters. They flatter with their tongue, and their throat is an open grave. And finally, what we learn about Absalom, the ugliness of this type of desire, is that not only did he flatter the people, he slandered his father. It wasn't just, you have a great case, but he said to the people, the king's not going to listen to you. He badmouthed his father to all of Israel of something that wasn't even true. Yes, they didn't ever get to the king because he interrupted them. He intercepted them before the king could do anything. And so he slanders his father. He slanders his reputation. He put others down so that it would make him look better. Remember we talked about that the last week or so? It doesn't work that way. You don't become more righteous because someone over here is unrighteous. You're righteous because your deeds are righteous, and that's it. You don't become smarter because you can make people look dumb. It doesn't work that way. But we fool ourselves. And this is exactly what Absalom wanted. He wanted people to think he was more compassionate, more caring. And the way that he did that was by making his father look the opposite. Tearing down his father so that he would look better. I want to ask you, how easy is it to destroy someone's reputation? You know, we always say someone is innocent to proven guilty. Well, that doesn't work if you get on the news. And the news says, you are accused of this. You are alleged to do this. Because most people don't hear the alleged part. They just, well, this guy's guilty. He's on the news. He must have done it. Anyone recognize this guy in the picture? It's been a while. Maybe that's good for him. This is a gentleman that goes back to the Olympics back in Atlanta. I think that was 96. Remember there was a bomb that went off? And he was one of the security staff. Well, the media made him guilty of this. And it was basically a media by trial, or trial by media. And his whole reputation was destroyed. And after the end of the trial, he was proven innocent. He didn't do it. The evidence showed he didn't do it. So how easy is it to destroy someone's reputation? It's real easy. And once you do, then let me ask you this. Now try to fix it. Try to fix it. It's like that old story where someone tore apart a person with a false accusation. And now they felt bad and they wanted to fix it. And so they said, well, how can I fix this? And this person that was they're seeking advice from says, well, let's take this pillow. And he rips open this pillow and all these feathers fly out. And they go all over. The wind just carries them all over. And then he says, now go back and put this pillow back together. You can't do it. The feathers are all gone. And that's the thing. Once you've done that, you can't fix it. What's done is done. Absalom has destroyed his father to such extent that David has to flee from Jerusalem, from his home, and give over the kingdom to Absalom. By the way, this is Richard Jewell, who had his reputation completely destroyed, his life, his career, gone. Maybe there's been enough time going by now that people have forgotten. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 12. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may on account of your good deeds, as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. That's a challenge, isn't it? He says, you behave in such a way that the slander doesn't even stick. In fact, you behave in such a way, not only does the slander not stick, but people see your deeds and they glorify God. That's a tough life. That's a challenge. But that's what he says we are to be like. And so as we close, we've got a lot of good lessons from a bad man. I want it. He wanted the kingdom, and he was going to do anything he had to get it. So I want to say as we close tonight, be careful the next time you really want something. It's not wrong to want something. But be very careful when you say, I will do anything, that we don't follow in the footsteps of Absalom. Because the reality is you don't have to be as ugly as Absalom to be guilty of sinful, ugly desires. Absalom wanted it. He wanted it now, and he went out and got it. But not to the glory of God. If there's one here tonight that we can help with the desire to become a Christian, desire to get better in your relationship with Jesus Christ, the desire to be richer spiritually as you follow Him. These are all good desires. And if we can help you do that, won't you let it be known as together we stand and as we sing.